A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into something really fascinating. It's all about data, global trends, and why our gut feelings about the world are often just wrong. We're diving into Hans Rosling's incredible book, Factfulness. Okay, let's unpack this because, well, Rosling basically argues that even highly educated people, they get global progress, poverty, health, systematically wrong, demonstrably
so. Yeah, it's a pretty electrifying start, isn't it? The core idea of the mission here is kind of revolutionary. Mm-hmm. He says our natural instincts, you know, the ones that kept us safe from saber-toothed tigers, they're totally wrong for understanding complex global data today. And the result, a really inaccurate, often fear-driven worldview. So this deep dive is essentially about giving you the tools to override those biases, to adopt what he calls factfulness, a habit based on evidence, moving us away from panic towards, well, constructive action.
And that opening statistic he uses is just so jarring. He'd give these quizzes on basic global facts, child mortality, education levels, population stuff, and consistently highly educated audiences. They scored worse than random chance. Like worse than chimps just randomly picking answers. How can smart people be so wrong about the world?
It's these 10 dramatic instincts he talks about. They're powerful. Things like seeking out bad news, seeing divides everywhere, needing someone to blame instantly. These instincts, they sort of filter out the good news and just amplify the bad. We end up operating on a worldview that's like decades out of date. And his point is, if we actually want to tackle the world's problems, we first need to get the facts right. And that means fighting our own brain's hardwiring.
Okay, before we get into those instincts, let's talk about Hans Rosling himself. He sadly passed away before the book came out. But what made him the right person to challenge us like this?
Well, he had this really unique mix of experience. For starters, he was a doctor, spent decades right on the front lines, particularly in rural Mozambique. He even discovered a disease there, Kanzo. So he saw extreme poverty firsthand, absolutely. But, and this is crucial, he also saw incredible rapid progress happening right in front of him, day by day.
Ah, so it wasn't just abstract numbers for him. He saw the human reality.
Exactly. But then he combined that boots on the ground experience with serious academic chops. He was a professor of international health, co-founded the Gapminder Foundation. But what really made him famous were those amazing TED Talks, you know, with the animated bubble charts. He made statistics into compelling stories people actually wanted to watch. He just bridged that gap perfectly between dry data, lived reality, and great communication. That gave him this unique authority to say, hey, we're look again.
Right. So the book is aiming for like a cognitive liberation, freeing us from this default pessimistic view.
That's a great way to put it. The core argument is, look, there are serious challenges, obviously climate change, extreme poverty still exists, but the world is not falling apart. Not overwhelmingly. There's been massive progress, you know, poverty down, health up, education improving. We just miss it because of these dramatic instincts. And the first step, he argues, is to ditch the most outdated idea we have, this binary view of the world.
The whole developed versus developing countries thing. Yeah, that's still everywhere, isn't it? News reports, political speeches.
And it's just obsolete. It makes you think there's this huge gap, like an us and a them. Rosling says, no, throw that out. Replace it with his four income levels. It shows the world is more of a continuum. Level one, extreme poverty, less than $2 a day. About 1 billion people still there. Level four, high income, over $32 a day. Another 1 billion people. But here's the kicker. The vast majority, like 5 billion people, are now in levels two and three. The huge middle-income groups, they have electricity, basic healthcare, running water. So that old gap, it's really more like a big lump in the middle now. It's continuous.
Wow. Okay. That framework alone completely changes how you picture the world's population. Okay. Let's use that idea now to look at some specific instincts. You mentioned the gap instinct first.
Yeah, the gap instinct. That's our tendency to, well, look for divides, to see two separate groups with nothing in between. But when you use those four levels, that chasm just vanishes. You see this huge overlapping middle ground.
And the tool he gives is pretty straightforward but effective. Look for the majority. Question comparisons that only use averages or the extremes because most people, most of the action, is in that middle.
Right. And that connects directly to the negativity instinct. Our brains are wired to notice threats. So sudden disasters, big news, gradual improvement, basically invisible. This just systematically makes us think things are getting worse, even when the long-term trend is positive.
Oh, I see that constantly. Take child mortality. You said, what, 14.4 million deaths back in 1950? Now it's around 4.2 million. I mean, if a headline said 10 million fewer child deaths, that'd be huge news. But because 4.2 million is still a horrible number, we focus only on the remaining tragedy and miss the incredible progress.
Exactly. And that leads right to one of his key mantras for factfulness. Things can be both bad and better at the same time. Just because a problem still exists doesn't cancel out the massive improvements that have been made. It's nuance.
Okay, moving on. What about the straight line instinct and the fear instinct? They sound like they're about how we predict things and assess danger.
They are, yeah. The straight line instinct is just our lazy assumption that trends will continue forever in a straight line, often upwards, exponentially. Think about the population explosion panic back in the 70s. Everyone assumed growth would just keep accelerating indefinitely.
But it didn't, right? The data showed something else.
Exactly. Lines bend. Roslin showed very clearly as countries move up those income levels, from level 1 towards 4, fertility rates drop dramatically. The number of children born each year globally has basically plateaued. Mm-hmm. So population growth will level off. The tool, just remember, trends are rarely straight lines. They're S-curves, slopes, bumps.
Got it. And the fear instinct, that feels very relevant today.
Oh, absolutely. It's that evolutionary glitch again.
Yeah.
We massively overestimate risks that are rare but dramatic, you know, terrorism, plane crashes, maybe a scary new disease outbreak. They grab our attention because they're terrifying. But we tend to ignore the common everyday risks that actually kill far more people. Things like traffic accidents, diabetes, lifestyle diseases. They're just not as dramatic.
So the fix is don't panic.
Basically, yeah. Calculate the actual risk. Recognize that fear messes with your perception. Make big decisions only after the panic phase and you've looked at the proportional data. All right, next up. How we actually interpret the numbers we see. The size instinct.
Right, the idea that a big number on its own doesn't tell you much, like that 4.2 million child deaths figure. It sounds huge, catastrophic even. But without comparing it to the 14.4 million from 1950, you miss the whole story, the context of improvement.
Precisely. Context is everything. So the tool is always look for proportion. Use rates, per capita figures, compare things. And he mentions the 80-20 rule, which is useful. Find the few big things that make up most of the total. Don't get lost in tiny details.
Okay, that makes sense. And that flows into the generalization instinct, right? Our habit of lumping huge groups together.
Yeah, stereotyping, basically. Treating Africa as one place, or Asia, or the West, as if everyone within those massive categories is the same.
And Rosling, having worked across Africa, knew how diverse it was. Nigeria is vastly different from South Africa, for example.
Totally. So his tool here is active curiosity. Deliberately look for the huge variations within any large group, and also look for surprising similarities across different groups. You have to actively resist the simple stereotype.
Okay, we're down to the last four instincts. These seem really relevant to how we make decisions, especially in politics or organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with the blame instinct. Why do we always need a villain?
It's just easier, isn't it? When something bad happens, poverty doesn't disappear, an economy tanks, our instinct is to find someone or something to point the finger at. A person, a company, a political party, a scapegoat. The tool Roslin offers is crucial. Resist finding that simple villain. Instead, force yourself to look for the systems at play. Complex problems almost always have multiple causes, not one bad guy.
Hmm. Okay. And related to that is the urgency instinct, right? That feeling of,
yeah,
we have to act now, W.
Yes, exactly. That now or never pressure. You see it in media headlines all the time, in business pitches. It creates panic and leads to really bad rush decisions. We don't allocate resources well under pressure.
It is stressful. So the tool is slow down.
Pretty much. Take a breath. Demand the data. Demand context. Ask for a range of possible outcomes or forecasts, not just a single crisis scenario. Real complex problems rarely have those instant do-or-die deadlines.
Okay, two left. The destiny instinct. This is the idea that some places or cultures are just stuck, that their fate is sealed by their inherent nature.
Yeah, the belief that, say, a country's culture or religion or geography permanently dictates its future. Roslin totally rejected this. His tool is simple. Remember that societies and cultures change, often rapidly. He points to places like South Korea went from desperately poor to an economic giant in a lifetime. Or Sweden, which was poor and had mass emigration 150 years ago. Things change. Destiny isn't fixed.
Right. And the final one, the single perspective instinct. The old, if all you have is a hammer. idea.
Exactly. Believing your own expertise, your own ideology, or your own professional background has all the answers. Trying to solve every complex problem with just one tool.
And the antidote is humility.
Intellectual humility, yes. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that complex issues like climate change or public health or education reform need a whole toolbox. You need engineers and sociologists and economists and artists. Seek out diverse viewpoints. Admit you don't know everything.
Rosling was so good at boiling these big ideas down into memorable lines. What are a couple of quotes that really capture the essence of factfulness for you?
Well, the one that directly dismantles that old worldview has to be: the world is not divided between Western rich nations and the developing world. Most countries are in the middle. Just hearing that forces you to pause and rethink, doesn't it?
It really does. Instantly.
And then there's that crucial mantra for navigating the news and, well, life. Things can be both bad and better. It's permission to acknowledge problems and progress simultaneously. It avoids both naive optimism and paralyzing despair.
Yeah, I love that one. It feels very realistic. And what about the media analogy?
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant. Forming your worldview by relying on the media would be like forming your view about me by looking only at a picture of my foot. It just perfectly captures how incomplete and skewed our picture of the world can be if we only consume the dramatic, exceptional stories.
So true. Okay, we've got the instincts, we've got the tools. Let's bring it home. What does this mean practically for listeners? How do we actually use factfulness day to day?
Well, it can change how you engage with almost everything. Let's start with media. Actively, consciously look for information about gradual improvements. Follow sources that track long-term trends, not just breaking news. It helps counter that negativity instinct.
Okay, makes sense. What about at work?
Professionally, it's huge. Anytime you feel that pressure, that urgency instinct kicking in for a big decision or investment, that's your cue to pause. Insist on comparative data. Ask for different scenarios. Fight the fear instinct. Don't let panic drive strategy.
Good advice. And maybe most importantly, in our civic lives, when we hear political claims or debates.
Definitely. Resist the blame instinct. When you hear someone assigning blame for a complex problem, poverty, crime, whatever, to one simple cause or group, be skeptical. Ask yourself, what are the underlying systems? What are the multiple factors involved? Look for systemic solutions, not just villains.
Thinking back on all this, what really struck me, what surprised me, was how fundamentally that four-income level framework shifted my perspective.
Yes.
Just like that. I realized my mental map of the world was stuck back in like the 1960s binary. Seeing that huge middle ground where most people live, it suddenly made the world feel less divided, less us versus them, and maybe a bit more hopeful.
Exactly. And that leads to Rosling's, I think, most profound takeaway. He argues that intellectual humility, truly being willing to say, I don't know, to question your own assumptions, to constantly seek out actual evidence that's not weakness. In a world awash with information and misinformation, that humility, that commitment to the facts is actually the strongest, most powerful position you can take. It allows you to see the world more clearly flawed, yes, but also undeniably getting better in so many ways.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.